Hi, this is Sean Halter, host of the CMO Suite podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and catch up on all the previous episodes at www.thecmosuite.com.
This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconex. Uconex provides digital solutions and teams to brand CMOs, VPs, and marketers looking for true transparency in the biddable media space. From paid social and PPC to complex platforms like the Trade Desk, brands from across the world have connected to Uconex. Visit them today at uconex.com. And No Kid Hungry. We're proud to promote No Kid Hungry and their many initiatives to help kids in need of meals. Visit them at nokidhungry.org.
This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. Winmo tracks every national advertiser, their agency relationships, and key executives within each organization. Get instant media spend, competitor tracking, and industry trend analysis in one easy-to-use application that integrates with all major CRM platforms. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite.
Finally, the CMO Suite is presented by thecmocouncil.org as their official marketers podcast. The Chief Marketing Officer Council is the only global network of executives specifically dedicated to high-level knowledge exchange, thought leadership, and personal relationship building among senior corporate marketing leaders and brand decision makers. The CMO Council's 15,000-plus members control more than $550 billion aggregated annual marketing expenditures and run complex distributed marketing and sales operations worldwide. For more information on membership, visit thecmocouncil.org. Let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You are listening to the CMO Suite. I am your host, Sean Halter. We are working out of Thumbstopper Studio in Florida right now. We are locked out from traveling to either the East Coast or the West Coast. I don't even know what you consider Florida. We're like the lower coast. I don't know. We're something here, but we're definitely making the most of it. I am incredibly excited that we've decided to jump back in, build out some podcasts. And while I planned on making it out to San Francisco later on this year, and I'm hoping I'll still get the chance to do that, I am incredibly excited that a guest that I have been trying to track down for years has decided to join us via Zoom. If you watch this on our YouTube channel, you'll be able to see not only his casa, but he had this amazing background going. We'll spend time talking about that in just a little bit. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Robin Daniels. He is the CMO right now currently at Matterport. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Sean. You're right. You and I have been friends for a long time, and we've been trying to make this happen for a long time as well. So I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you doing it. I appreciate you going through. First of all, thank you for putting on pants. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but since we're Zooming these, everybody's got to, you know, switch out of their shorts or their sweatpants or whatever. You've popped up this amazing background visual, right, of the Hobbit hole.
Oh, look, we want to jump into the chaos that is today to some extent.
But before we do, let's talk a little bit just about you and your background. Where did you grow up, Robin?
So I'm originally from Copenhagen, Denmark, where I grew up. And so I lived there most of my life. My dad was Danish. My mother was American. And in the early 2000, basically, I decided to move to California. And the reason why is because I've always been a nerd. I love technology. I love the implications of what technology can do in the world. I love the impact it can have on people's lives. So I was already seeing it back in the 90s, and I was an early geek making websites and just tinkering with technology. And I was always reading about the magic of Silicon Valley and how it didn't matter who you were, where you came from, what educational background you had, as long as you decided to work hard, apply yourself, and give it your all, you could make anything happen. So I was really enamored with that. So on February 1st, 2000, I decided to buy a one-way ticket from Copenhagen to California. I didn't have a job or a place to stay. I didn't know a single person. I'd actually never been to California. I just thought, I didn't want to look back on my life when I was 60, 70 years old and think to myself, I would have, I could have, I should have. I didn't want to look back with regret and think to myself, I was too scared to do it. You know, Denmark is a great country and I love it with all my heart. But it's also safe. If I didn't make it in Silicon Valley, I thought, well, I could always go back. It's not like it's going anywhere, but I don't want to have those regrets. So I moved February 1st, 2000. And a month after I got there, the whole market crashed. It was quite the shock. You know, I spent the first couple of weeks just applying for jobs. And luckily, I got one because everybody was hiring back then. It was kind of like the big boom time.
The boom, yeah.
But then a month later, the whole market crashed. And at first, everyone thought, holy crap, what just happened? And this got worse and worse, you know, layoffs and, you know, every single day. And then we got hit with like a 1-2 punch. 9/11 happened, you know, of course, a year and a half later. And then things just got worse and worse. But throughout those I would say, pretty dark times that I managed to luckily find jobs, even though I got laid off, you know, so I've been through that whole thing. It's certainly not fun to be laid off. But, you know, if you work hard and you network your way in the right way and you can find the opportunities, there's someone that will probably have you. And so I managed to get into a company called Veritas in 2001, where I also met my wife. And that was, I would say, was really my start of my Silicon Valley journey, even though I had a few kind of stop starts beforehand.
So let's pause there for just a second, really, because I think some of what you just said is incredibly important, and certainly important for what's happening right now. There is so much that's happening right now. So many layoffs, so many readjustments, so many people that in some ways are probably trying to figure out not only how to get through the next couple of months or what that looks like, but from that, in many ways, often comes opportunity or life-changing opportunity, or from the depths of, wow, I really need to figure out what my skill set is, to be able to believe in yourself and raise yourself up. When times are good, it's easy, honestly, to be a little lazy, you know?
That's right.
Yeah. Come in, it ain't that hard to kind of move the needle as a marketer, throw some media out there. You know, of course, hindsight would have been great if we'd all, invested in Zoom. Apparently you weren't as great a tech geek as you thought you were.
Exactly.
But at the same time, you know, you've been through it now. Especially if you were part of that, you know, that last evolution that you started this conversation with, you know, and it sounds like, again, you just continued to kind of build up from there, and you met your wife at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's you're so spot on. I mean, I've been laid off twice, actually. First in 2000, you know, at the height of the dot-com crash. So you go into kind of this uncertainty. It's really scary. And then I got laid off again in 2006 when I was at 2005, when I was working at a startup in England. And that company just ran out of money. And of course, most spectacularly, you know, I was part of WeWork last year that, you know, had an incredible rise. And then, of course, an incredible, very public, I would say, downfall in some ways. And so the difference for me has always been the mindset. You know, you have to do your best, right? And I think of it, do your best at work, you do your best in life and so on, but you ultimately can't control the outcome in many ways. You can do your best to influence it, I think, and you can do your best, of course, to drive certain behaviors and certain attitudes towards certain outcomes, but ultimately, you can't choose the outcome, I think, at the end of the day. So, but you can certainly choose your attitude. You can choose what you do about it. And that has been the difference for me. And maybe it's something, you know, when I first moved to the US, I ended up finding a roommate on Craigslist because, you know, I had no money. I had to find some cheap place to live. And the guy that I moved in with, I just rented a room from this guy in a house in Los Gatos. He was really into Tony Robbins. And one day he's like, you know, we should go see Tony Robbins. And I'm like, okay, you know, I didn't really know much about Tony Robbins. I'd heard the name. And so we went to one of his seminars called Unleash the Power Within. This was probably in the spring of 2000. And it really, I think, colored my view of the world and just in the sense of what you can achieve if you put your mind to it and how you control your own attitude towards things and how you apply yourself. And I still think I carry that attitude of positivity and impact with me wherever I go. And I think a lot of it happened back then, actually.
You know, it's funny. We've interviewed, I think, maybe 60, 70, maybe marketers for the podcast. We're tipping over 50 episodes at this point. It's the first time I've heard Tony Robbins mentioned. You do bring something so incredibly positive. Again, having, you know, us be somewhat peripheral friends over the last several years, to be able to see, again, some of those rises, some of those falls, some of what, you know, you talked about WeWork. I won't make you spend a ton of time talking about it, but you were in the thick of this just massive. This thing was just ready to explode, and then it imploded at a speed at which I don't know that I've ever seen quite so publicly. But through all of that, you managed to keep this positive attitude through every single step and every single moment. And I don't know how you did it. There are times where I feel like I get brought to my knees through little bits of chaos. I can't imagine the amount of stress that sits there. Do you think that still stems from that moment of kind of refocusing your life, or is it something that's built into you? Because I don't know how you do it. I don't.
I think it's part of it. So just also a little bit more of my background. So I grew up in Denmark, as I said, to an American mother and a Danish father, and both were kind of these spiritual hippies. So my mother actually has written several books on self-help and on new age topics, you know, about how to empower yourself and how to focus yourself and so on. So I think certainly a lot of it comes from my upbringing, no doubt about it. And just kind of learning to have a positive attitude about things.
You're damn lucky, that's for sure.
My
dad was pissed off when his cigarettes weren't sitting where they were supposed to be. Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah. My mother and dad got divorced when I was very young, and I didn't really see much of my dad, but he was kind of this Chinese herbalist, you know, and that was it, what he was into. And I respected them both for going their own ways and finding their own path in life. And they both had their struggles, but it's not like it was an upbringing full of love, I would say, in many ways, but it wasn't like an upbringing full of unity between your parents. But we had love from each of them. And I think they showed to myself and my two brothers who I have that, you know, there's value in following your path and having it, and what you can control about it, like I said, is your mindset and your attitude. So I certainly have a lot from my childhood, but I think the Tony Robbins experience, it was so intense, and I was so young. I was 22 at the time. So you're young
saying
and impressionable.
It's too late for me, 51. I can read a book and ain't nothing's changing. I'm stuck where I'm at, Ryan.
No, it's never too late. I'm in my 40s now. You know, I'm trying to also constantly improve myself, but you certainly get set in your ways. But the Tony Robbins thing really, because it was such an intense shared experience, it was you and hundreds of other people, and you're there intensely from early morning to late evening for like 3 days. It was like all consuming. And I think it just had a way of shocking your system in some way. And so there's a lot of things, you know, that I took with me, you know, like how to create rapport with people was one of the key things I learned at this thing. You know, like how do you strike a connection with somebody and show interest, and not just fake interest, but genuine interest in their life, their success, and so on. And when I think of all the greatest companies that I've worked for in the last two decades, the companies that truly build community, that build success, is because they show over and over and over again that they care more about your success than their own success. They care more about your outcomes than their outcomes. They care more about you being the hero because you're using the platform, technology, software, whatever, than their own like just revenue goals, right? And the companies who do that say, we care more about you than we care about us. Those are the ones that stand the test of time because people fall in love with them.
Well, and it sounds like that's even more so what brands are going to have to work their way through. What's going on right now is you have to be able to bring value back to the table. Certainly a hell of a lot less selling, a lot more solving. I want to make sure we spend some time on Matterport and some of the other things that you've got going on out there. Can we talk about WeWork for just a second? So many questions. We could, I'll save it for a drink when I'm out west or if you're back in the city at some point. But I wanted to just briefly hit on at least something from it, which is stripping aside all of the chaos of what did or didn't happen and why it did or didn't happen. Do you think what's happening right now, because clearly the at-home work environment is going to change. Perhaps these days of just having floors and floors and floors of desks and employees is going to change. Do you think that through all of this, that there's maybe actually opportunity for WeWork? Do you think they'll continue to be able to evolve themselves in a way where these smaller offices actually become an opportunity for them in this transformation? Or are they stuck in this space where work from home becomes even more important and WeWork becomes less relevant, in your opinion?
Yeah, it's a great question. And like you said, I don't have a crystal ball, but here's my take on it is, I think they, like many other companies, also have to reinvent themselves. They've been going for a decade and they had a great thing going. I would say whether you like WeWork or not, they changed the future of work forever because of the notion of like, okay, how do we create an office space that people actually want to show up to, right? So is it hard to create a cool office space? Yes, it is actually hard to create one where the energy flows and people want to show up and you can attract great talent and you have great meetings and so on. It's not the hardest thing in the world, but it's hard to do. And I think they did it at a scale that we'd never seen before. So whether you like them or not, I think they changed the future of work. They also have to evolve. I think the future of work, in my mind, is very much going to be, there's still going to be a place for offices, but the offices are going to change. The office of the future, in my thinking, is going to have two things, two key elements. One is it's going to have large communal areas where you're going to have great coffee, great seating, comfortable seating, lots of little nooks and crannies where you can chat with each other, or you can just do work, put on some headphones and do some great work. And I think WeWork is really well suited for that, because if you go to any WeWork space, they have lots of these open spaces.
We've used it before. Had a WeWork office in New York for quite a while. Yep.
Exactly. And there's going to be, so that's number one, the first feature. I think it's going to be more important than ever. The second feature, I think, is going to be lots of conference rooms. So people are going to have private meetings or do private brainstorming sessions, problem solving sessions, and so on. I think the days where everyone has a desk is over. I don't think any company is going to go back to really, let's have a desk for every employee. You might have some hot desking so people can come and go and have a space where they can put down and settle for the day. But I don't think the future points to where everyone has a desk. It's very expensive. It doesn't really make sense if you come in twice a week, you know, or something like that. It doesn't make sense to me.
Isn't it amazing? Let me pause you there for 1 second. Yeah. But isn't that amazing to just think of this moment in time, this craziness of something that we all thought was the bird flu at first, and then we didn't know what it was. And now, you know, whether you think we've overdone it or underdone it, that moment is going to literally change the world as we know it beyond just our own personal health. It will change where most of us spend a third, if not more, of our lives, which is work, and it will change forever. My kids will never know. Your kids will never know work the way we knew it a month ago. They'll never experience that.
So true. It's so true. And
probably for the better, in my opinion, and maybe yours.
I think so too. I mean, it's funny. Somebody showed me recently, you know, a photo from, I think, the 50s of, you know, people sitting in rows of desks working, right?
And you go into a modern. Ties and hats or something.
But then you go into a modern office, it's just rows of desks as well. It's just people sitting working. It hasn't really changed that much. Yeah, it's a little cooler. The lighting is cooler. The furniture is cooler. You've got some cooler knickknacks instead of having everything sterile. But it's more or less the same. I mean, let's hope to God that we actually change the future of work and come out with this with a little bit of different thinking. You know, I'm an eternal optimist. So I think we're going to come out with something that is even more satisfactory for most people. So the way I think WeWork has to evolve is, you've been in a WeWork, you know, beautiful spaces, but a lot of these conference rooms are also just like normal conference rooms. They're not that exciting. You get there, there's like a desk and a couple of chairs and so on. I think those conference rooms also need to be a lot more comfortable, a lot more human, a lot more authentic. So you can actually strike up conversations that are not as stiff as they are. So they have the common areas, which are great, but even the conference room kind of needs to be to evolve. And I think we'll see that in the future.
I want to make sure we spend some time talking about Matterport here in just a moment. But at the same time, just to dovetail off of the WeWork conversation, I do also think, and we've talked to several guests about it, there's a wealth of talent that has, many of which are in transition right now. And as we come out of whatever this looks like, it could again be one of those moments where the greatest collection of talent is adjusting what they do and how they do it and what they're willing to give or what they're willing to take. And for many companies, many of ours included, that, you know, one of the first things when we interviewed somebody, we would say is, we have to work out of this office. We don't do work from home. It has to be collaborative. It has to be this. I know my attitude from work from home has changed entirely for any of the companies that we have an investment in. It's now it's all about talent. And you know, we've got some great designers who we always made come into the office. And it's like, look, if they can do design work from home, if we can get used to these things like you and I are doing with Zoom right now, why not take the talent wherever the talent wants to be? Why force them to work within our system? What's your thought on that?
No, I totally agree. I think any company who's smart will adapt because they want to be able to attract the best talent in the world. And that means giving people the ultimate flexibility in where you want to work, when you want to work, how you want to work. It shouldn't really matter as long as you deliver results. But that doesn't mean that there's not an opportunity for more communication, more collaboration, more actually getting together. I still think, you know, video conferencing is infinitely better than just a phone call, but it's still not as good as the real thing. It doesn't mean that we're not going to get there one day, but it's not.
Sure.
It's not as the same as you and I being in the same room. There's an energy that's shared, reading each other's body language and so on. And sometimes that's great, and sometimes I think it can be a stopper. But mostly, I think it's still a little bit better. But if you want to be a company for the future, you have to be ultimately super flexible. And that means, you know, you have to get a lot more creative in how you think about how you set up your office, your communication, and so on. I think, you know, especially I think there's going to be a lot of innovation coming out of this around how we actually get people to be creatively in flow together. So one of the things I've observed, and you know, I keep posting this. You know, you see me post it on LinkedIn and other places. Like I think video conferencing is awesome for one-to-one conversations because we can focus on each other. It's great for even team meetings if I can, you know, talk to my team and so on. I still haven't seen video conferencing be super great if you have multiple people trying to do creative problem solving, where you go into a room and you're trying to like talk over each other, because there's magic in talking over each other and building on each other's ideas really rapidly, and you're whiteboarding and you're sketching things down. I haven't seen any solution yet that has solved that. That's not to say it's not coming or it's being worked on by many smart entrepreneurs out there, but I haven't seen it yet. And I miss that about the remote work. And so if we solve that, then I think the possibilities for the future become infinitely much larger.
I was just going to say, maybe that's, again, where some of this virtual reality, maybe that's where some of those adjustments in technology help create maybe that opportunity where you, Lord only knows, I mean, if we start putting on VR helmets and we're all in the same room, it sounds a little weird, but maybe, again, that to your point, that's kind of where things change. They're always evolving, and you're always at the forefront of that. I want to make sure we spend some time on Matterport. So let's talk about that for just a second. You leave, we work.
Sure.
Some good and some bad, in that, you know, that spectacularness. Did you already kind of have the thought as to what you wanted to do next? Did it happen fast? Did it happen slow? How was that for you, and what drove you, to Matterport, and talk to us about really what that is and what you guys are doing?
Sure. So first of all, I mean, the year I spent at WeWork was probably the most intense year of my life. You know, it was full of incredible highs, and I worked with some amazing people, but it was also full of some deep lows, obviously, which it's been chronicled many times by many people around the world. It's also just, I think, you know, having your company rake through the mud, you know, publicly is just obviously very hard, both for yourself and for your whole team. And the hard thing was we were in a quiet period the whole time. So you can't really come out and do anything about it, which I think is one thing that many people didn't know. It's like, why isn't WeWork talking back or trying to defend itself?
You're getting punched in the face and you can't say anything.
Exactly. You're getting punched in the face and you can't say anything. It's like going out in the middle of a highway and there's traffic and you're not getting out of the way. It just seems stupid, but it was pretty rough. So after the whole experience at WeWork, I decided to take some time off because it was just so intense. So I traveled the world, just kind of, you know, talking to companies. I spent a lot of time advising companies, mentoring companies, and so on. I must have met close to 100 companies in the whole like last 4 or 5 months. And it was really fun. I really enjoyed it. Just kind of talking about branding, category creation, go-to-market, all kinds of cool things. But one of the companies I was introduced to was Matterport. And I actually learned about Matterport when I was at WeWork, because WeWork was starting to use Matterport a lot for the buildings. You know, WeWork was growing so rapidly, opening so many buildings. And one of the things that it's the most time consuming is when people come in and say, we want a tour of a WeWork building. Give us a tour because we want to get to see the facilities, want to see the office and so on. Well, the whole plan was, what if we could use virtual touring from a company like Matterport to actually give people an experience online so you can get a full 360-degree tour that's 3D, fully immersive, that's very different than anything else out there, which means we can cut down on the amount of time that people actually have to go drive to somewhere, get a tour, and then you have to go see two other buildings. Oh, actually, you know, I don't like that one. Let's go see 5 more buildings. This is a lot of time wasted. What if you do it all online and transact all online? And so the plan was to roll out Matterport for all the WeWork buildings. We already had it in several, I think close to 100 buildings or so when I left. But the plan was to have every WeWork building completely Matterported, which was awesome. So that's when I was first introduced to, and I saw the possibilities. And then when I was talking to and I met the CEO, I think it was early January, I was just really enamored with the vision of how big this could become. It wasn't meant for just real estate. It could be residential real estate. You know, many companies like Redfin and so on obviously use it now for virtual touring. It could be residential real estate, commercial real estate. But now I'm seeing galleries open up, you know, virtual tours. I'm seeing museums open up virtual tours. So it made me think any company with a physical presence will end up having some kind of that, we'll have to digitize that physical presence and open it up to the world. If you want to show your culture, if you're a supermarket and you want to sell your goods, if you're an airport and you want to give people experience in a way to find their way through an airport, if you want to give people a digital experience of a new art exhibition, the possibilities are endless for us to really become, I would say, the Google Maps of the physical and built world, you know, the indoor world.
So how do you take that thought? How do you take that technology, which you guys have obviously invested in and involved? You mentioned Google. And so, you know, as we kind of wrap our way through this, how do you take that and either immerse the brand culture in that, or how do you do it fast enough so that Google doesn't go, oh, that's interesting, let's just tack that on?
Yeah, it's a great question. Obviously, we're mindful of the competitive landscape. We're not competitors with Google. We work with them in many ways. Because they don't do anything like we do. And so the backstory is really fascinating. Our founders, they hacked an Xbox 360 because back in 2010, Xbox came out with the Kinect module, which was kind of like this module that let you play games on the Xbox, but in a very interactive way because it will actually detect your presence. So they hacked the Xbox. They took out some of the hardware and they built the first 3D camera. And that's how we got started. So we've had a long history, like a decade long of actually building out a really, really high-end camera. And what's really exciting is we've taken that technology, we've now extrapolated the best parts of the technology, especially the software, the software platform and the AI platform that stitches together all these individual photos to create a 360 3D immersive tour. And we've now released it on the iPhone, which is really exciting. So I sent you one the other day,
Sean. Thank you.
It's a quick scan I did of my own room. It took me 10 seconds to do, but it's a fully immersive tour of my room.
Pretty
and
incredible.
It took me 10 seconds to do, and I did it on my iPhone. You know, and so that's where the technology is going, which means that we're now giving this to every single person everywhere in the world because they can do it with the device they have in the palm of their hand. But it's been interesting joining a new company remotely. I haven't met my team yet, which is still weird. I met them over Zoom, obviously, but I haven't met them in person. And we're also in a constrained environment. But I think from a marketing perspective, in some ways, I'm kind of excited by that because constraints breed creativity. Just because your budgets are being reduced and you're being mindful of it doesn't mean you have to have zero creativity. You can actually start doing things that weren't even possible for, or forces your thinking into new directions that you didn't have before when you had more you know, opportunities ahead of you.
Well, and to your point, it kind of forces your thinking to do just that, which is how do you be creative at a moment in our life where you need to be adapt and adaptive. Again, just running a bunch of media out there or building a bunch of branding isn't going to take you to where you are. I'm excited to watch what happens with that, especially the part, you know, just as you said, in the palm of your hand, that's where everything seems to work from. And the fact that you managed to land there is exciting. I hope you get to meet your team soon. That's for damn sure.
Yes.
Well, listen, Robin Daniels, CMO of Matterport, thank you for making time for us on the show. Thank you for letting us use technology to have you on the show. And I'm excited to once we're all allowed back out, I'm excited to make my way back out to the West Coast. And hopefully we'll be able to sit down and have that drink we've talked about. Thank you very much for joining us on the show. And Lisa, take us out of the show.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. Podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. Uconnects provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnects today for a free demo. Uconnects, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.
This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite.